Pure Prairie League days. Let's head in that direction. Now, this is a...
All of a sudden, we go national.
All of a sudden, it's the real big time.
Pure Prairie League was established with Craig Fuller, and Billy was in... You were in the second incarnation, correct?
Right, the Bustin' Out.
Yeah, Bustin' Out, which was a great album.
Right in that time, too, we were doing the Mushroom Jones thing.
Right.
I think there's a better shot with this Prairie League thing. So I decided I'm going to do the Prairie.
Well, you chose that one, right?
Well, but you guys were mad at me. Yeah, but they had already you know, came in and took over that. But within a couple of years, you know, Craig decided that he had hit enough. We needed a front man, singer, songwriter.
Well, plus he was having problems with the conscientious objector.
Well, yeah. Well, he had just gotten done serving his stint at Springfield, Missouri.
I couldn't tell you.
Anyway, he decided he had enough and wanted to take a break from everything.
So they called me. I had just gotten back from Hawaii. And I think Tim and I, we were playing a little bit, but not real serious, right?
Yeah, at that time, we were playing around. Not a lot, but we were playing.
So anyway, I wasn't really doing anything when they called. And I said, sure, I'll go play some gigs with you. And they told me they'd pay me by the gig, and they lied.
So this was after Bustin' Out, but before the...
But before Tulane Highway.
Tulane.
Yeah.
We were doing a lot of dates, backing up the Bustin' Out. And I remember...
Because Amy had hit Craig left, right?
Yeah.
Well after, because what happened was they dropped Pure Prairie League from the RCA label. They had released Amy as a single, and it did absolutely nothing. So we went out on the road, did what, 285 gigs or something?
We were doing a bunch of colleges.
We played every college in the United States, I swear. And we finished every show with Amy. And the next thing you know, they had to re-release the album because everybody was asking for it. So
Vince Gill come in to play with.
Vince Gill came in when I left the group in 1979. Vince Gill was one of the guys that came in. Tell him the story about how he got chosen. He wasn't really there for the audition.
Yeah, Vinny had brought somebody over to audition, and we got done with the auditions, and And so Vince is sitting over in the corner, starting to pick.
Where is this happening?
This is out in L.A.
Yeah, we were all living in Hollywood.
At a rehearsal studio out there. And I said, hey, Vince, plug in your accent and, let's play a little bit. So we jammed for a little bit. And he got done, and I said, I looked at the Riley and Connor, I said, and they all shook their head. And I said, Vince, you want to be a band?
Yeah.
And so he went. But I was going to tell you, when we were coming back from West Virginia, bouncing around in this motorhome, Larry's back in the back writing a song. Yeah, we get back, and I finally get to bed. It's about 10 o'clock in the morning. Phone rings. Larry says, I got a song. Listen to this. It's Tulane Highway. So I guess I was the first person to hear Tulane
Highway.
You
were, yeah. I'll tell you, I was in the back. We were in a GMC camper, and I was in the way back part. And it was really difficult to even sit there. Because Tommy Spiegel was driving, and he was seeing monkeys on the rearview mirror. He'd been driving a long time, and we're going through the hills of West Virginia, and you know how windy that is.
It started with chipmunks.
Yeah. Ended up with monkeys.
That's dangerous.
It was dangerous. Yeah. Anyway, as soon as we started doing that song, RCA picked us back up and decided to do another album, and we flew to Hollywood and did Tulane Highway.
That was Tulane Highway.
Yeah. Cool. And then three or four or five albums after that.
How many were there after that? I'm trying to...
Well, there was If the Shoe Fits.
Just Fly.
Just Fly, Dance.
A live one.
I've got them on the wall at home, so if I'm standing in front of them, I know what's going on.
Soon it will be time to go. I don't want to leave, I guess you know. Maybe something. Going my
is sleeping in. You turn around, I'm back again. I guess this time I'm really gone, but it don't seem right.
Yeah, I'm George Powell, one of the founding members of Pure Prairie Lead. I've always enjoyed working with Larry, and he's had a tremendous effect on my career and life. I met Larry in the late 60s. I was going to school down in Danville, Kentucky, and heard about a band up in Cincinnati, and came up, and it was the Goshorn Brothers at that time playing on Clifton Avenue, and it was really a life-changing experience. I couldn't get over the quality and of sound they had. It just filled the room, but it wasn't screechy or uncomfortable to listen to. It hit you right in the chest. Eventually, actually modeled a lot of my playing style after a Fred Fogwell, their rhythm player. I went on to meet Larry. I introduced myself and then discovered the next best thing about Larry and the Goshorns was that they were very personable people. I mean, Larry accepted me as a person and as a musician. And, you know, the next thing I know, I was going to talk to him personally. And at that time, he was living in the Mushroom House, which was very interesting. You have to remember, it was the late 60s, and the climate in Cincinnati, or the climate in the United States, was quite different at that time. There was a war going on, and especially if you were a draft-age male, it was a real concern. And there was a lot of antagonism between the establishment, quote-unquote, and people that were not too crazy about the war. And although Larry and the Sacred Mushroom at that time, or the Goshorns, weren't making any political statements that I'm aware of, they were more or less grouped in with that faction. So I remember Larry had given me directions. It was up by the UC campus for the Mushroom House, and I eventually found it by the number of police cruisers surrounding it. They were really giving the guys the jaundice eye. But anyways, that didn't affect anything. It didn't affect them. It didn't affect me. I went on to meet Larry, and from that point, began to model my own career. I had met Craig, and we started the Prairie League. And Craig began to introduce me to electric instruments and how to play them. I started with a J40 Gibson, the acoustic model with the knobs on it, like John Lennon played, and eventually moved to a Stratocaster, just like Fred had used with the guys. And eventually, Craig was unable to continue with the band, and our first choice was Larry. And amazingly, he took our offer and came into the band, and completely changed the direction of the group and made a wonderful contribution. So that's how that got started. And The biggest experience beyond musically working with Larry and Tim was the personal experience. The whole Goshorn family is just unbelievably personable, and I eventually met Mom and Pop Goshorn. I immediately was kind of adopted by their family, and that's a wonderful feeling. My parents were living out west, and it was like, you know, being involved in a family, and then that translated into our music as well.
Steve Schmidt's on the line. Shall we bring Steve in?
Stevie.
Hey.
Steve, I believe you're up in Woodstock, right?
Late.
I saw your post on Facebook, as a matter of fact, the Little Bear Restaurant. That's where I ran into John Lennon and Yoko.
I figured you had been there in Woodstock at some point.
Steve, reminisce a little bit about when you first started playing with Larry and when you first hooked up with Larry.
I mean, I guess we met each other previous to playing together. But then I think the first time we really played that I remember was when they started playing at Tommy's. And I came in there just to listen, and they kindly invited me up to play.
We had an upright piano that was not plugged into anything, so we took two microphones, stuck one down the inside, and put another one in the front, and that's what Steve was playing. That's the same way we got Mike Baney to play the bass. He walked in one day and said, "You guys need a bass player." And Billy Hines the same way. He walked in and he brought in a snare drum and a hi-hat. That was it. For a long time, that's all we used.
Love when that happens.
I learned the tunes as I was playing them. But then I also realized a lot of all the tunes. At that time, you were tuning down a half step.
Yeah, so that was fun for you.
You're getting ready to start. This is in G, 1, 2, 3, 4. I play a G, but it's like G flat, you know? It was a good education that way for me.
Well, but, you know, Steve, anyway. You were so good, you just jumped right into it. I mean, there was only one big bad chord, and then everything came right together.
Talk a little bit about playing, besides the equipment, of the energy you guys had going at Tommy's.
You know, I mean, I guess Jimmy and Larry started playing just a duo, and then...
It was a duo. Instead of using acoustic guitars, we used electric guitars with amplifiers, but just me and Tim.
It was a heavy metal duo.
And nobody had ever heard anything quite like it. But as we added people, the energy just kept picking up and picking up until finally you couldn't contain that place. It was crazy.
And you ended up with a whale of a record, too.
We did.
The True Stories is just a phenomenal record.
It really is it's one of the best live albums I've ever heard. Everybody played so well on it. And the energy from the crowd, you could just feel it, you know.
Was that all one evening's performance?
Or? Actually, it was, I think it was a Friday, and then we did a Saturday afternoon performance and brought everybody back.
Use a little of each.
Yeah, because we had a couple of lower energy songs that, you know, Friday night was just too wild for that. So we wanted to soften it up a little bit, so we did a Saturday
afternoon. Not a bad performance on there, just spectacular on the
drums. Everybody played really, really well, really well.
Yeah.
I went down there and sang one night with you.
I remember that.
And we sang an Everly Brothers.
It was the Everly Brothers. Was it I've Been Cheated?
It could have been, yeah.
When Will I Be Loved?
When Will I Be Loved? I'm pretty sure that was it. Yeah, we had a lot of people stop in down there, and some really good players would just pop in. They'd hear that we were there. Because I had met a lot of them when I was on the road with Pure Prairie League. And they would just pop in and play, and it was pretty exciting. You know, a lot of good players.
For a long time, there was no stage. The people they'd be standing there right with you. I mean, right next to you, and having a drink, you know, hand you the drink, have a drink with them. It was a party. The crowd was part of the band.
And then what we did was we kind of got like almost easy chairs and a light, you know, like a lamp and a coffee table and... It was kind of like our living room.
Your comfy zone.
Everybody would walk in and just stand around the living room, and we'd play. And it was, about 130 dB. If you don't mind a jet taking off, go down to Tommy's.
That band had a really cool feel. We used to call it the Goshorn loop or lop or something, because it was just this feel that I hadn't heard really with any of the group. It's just a really cool thing.
Yeah, we would get into a
roll.
Yeah, kind of a roll, yeah. We didn't have any limits on how long you played a song. We just played as long, you know, not quite to the Grateful Dead, but we did a lot of extended jams.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what strikes me about the band, and I felt so lucky to become a part of it, but it just happened in a very natural, organic manner.
Yeah, unlike any other band I've ever been in. It was a special time.
Dinner by candlelight, expensive champagne, that sparkle in your eyes just drives me insane. Tonight could be the night we finally decide your place or mine. We'll take a hansom cab and ride through the park with a blanket wrapped around us. We'll snuggle in the dark. Tonight should last forever. It's only the start. Your place, oh mine. It seems all I've been doing is waiting for you. Forget the single life, let's live it as two.
We are with Larry Goshore on this WVXU, celebrating Larry's music and what he's done musically for this community with a bunch of our friends, Marco Sastry and Billy Hines and Gary Burbank and Joe Stewart, and Katie Lauer is here. And on the telephone is Steve Schmidt. And I think, Timmy, you're still there?
I am.
And Tim's still here from down in the bluegrass. And while we have Steve on the line, too, you mentioned you were, Larry said, posting some pictures of Woodstock. And you ran into John Sebastian there as well, correct?
Yes. After we did this concert at the Woodstock Community Center, we went out just to get a beer and something to eat. So the restaurant now, a nice Italian restaurant called Piccina. We were sitting there and somebody said, "There's John Sebastian sitting over there with some people." And then eventually he came over because he knew somebody. who was with us, and we all just ended up talking together. So it was really special, and he was very nice.
John's a very nice guy. Cool. When Joe and I were at the Rhode Island...
And we went and saw the Love and Spoonful at the Hyannisport High School gym.
Yeah, well, we were like a foot away from them. We saw the birds there, too.
Yeah, the birds were there, too.
But I was thinking of the time we were at the Newport Folk Festival, and this girl came up to me and said, "You're John Sebastian." I, you know, I had the glasses and the hair, and I said, "No, I'm not." And she said, "Oh, you are." And I kept telling her no. And eventually she said, "Look, I'm trying to get an interview with John Sebastian. I know you're John Sebastian. Why are you lying?" And so finally I did an interview with him. And I have no idea what happened to it, but that was interesting.
Well, I have always thought, and I've heard this from other people too, that you have a John Sebastian-like quality in your voice. And
yeah, I think there's a little bit of a similarity
there. You recorded with the Spoonful, Wild About My Lovin'.
Right.
Most recently, and maybe we can play this, a beautiful version of the Coconut Grove.
Oh, yeah. I always loved that song.
Which I think was the kind of the starting point of an album you were going to do then that kind of didn't get off the ground. Or maybe
Well, actually, some of the songs that I recorded with that one ended up on this I Wish I Could Fly CD. I decided after I put them all together, it took, 10 years to put it all together because I was just doing all kinds of other things. And what happened was I decided that they should all be originals because obviously, you know, because of my health and things like that, I wasn't sure whether I'd ever be doing another one, and I wanted them to be all original songs. So I left that one off, but that's a very good tune, and we did a really good version of that with Nat Commissar singing with us. That was really good.
Real special.
It's really true how nothing matters. No mad, mad world and no mad hatters. No one's pitching cause there ain't no batters in Coconut Grove. Don't bar the door, there's no one coming. The ocean's roar with all the drumming of any city thoughts or city ways. The ocean breezes cool my mind. The salty days are hers and mine. Just to do what we wanna. Tonight we'll find a tune that's ours. Softly she will speak the stars till sun up. It's all from heaven, someone knowing just which way your head is blowing. Always warm like in the morning in Coconut Grove. The ocean breeze is cool, my mind. The salty days are hers and mine. Softly she will speak the stars till sun up. It's really true how nothing matters. No mad, mad world and no mad hatters. No one's pitching cause there ain't no batters in Coconut Grove.
Larry, you have, besides doing your own projects, have produced other people as well. Do you like that aspect of the business?
I love production.
Who have you worked with in that respect?
Basically, the group here in town that I work most with is Denim Road. They do some great songs. Jimmy Zuzo is the guitar player and writer. But most of the stuff that I've done has been with Marcos, and we enjoy working together. We work together well. It's hard to find somebody that you click with in the studio, you know, and when you don't know
something. Do a little something with Noah Hunt?
Yeah, I did Noah several Hunt. Things with Noah, and who was his partner?
I think we did Noah.
Jason Denny?
Noah's,
Jason Denny, right. We did
maybe Noah
and Jason.
First recording.
Yeah, Noah's first recording.
And yeah, Jason Denny.
Right. That was before he got with
Kenny Wayne.
Kenny Wayne Shepherd, yeah.
From a guitarist standpoint, Larry, the way Larry plays is something. It's unique. It's like almost where Eric Clapton stopped. He went further. I mean, Larry's just nothing but a big ball of soul and feeling. And it's, you know, it's really something when you're a guitar player, especially when you're in the studio and you play a bunch of stuff and he plays three notes and just flattens, just buries, you know, he's got that because he's got all the soul. And then when he gets together with Timmy, that's another thing. Those guys together, especially when they're mad at each other, it's something. It's, and they're trying to outdo each other. It's an incredible thing to hear.
You know what? I was going to ask about that. You hear the Davies brothers and the Kinks. What's the longest time that you guys have had a family feud that you just wouldn't play with each other? It had to have happened a time or two.
Well, you know, I think we always had
it's happening
some...
now, actually.
Yeah. It's, I haven't seen Tim in quite a while.
It's been a while.
I think what the deal was, we always had obligations, so you couldn't let your anger go over, like, the next day because you had a gig that night, so you had to get over it.
You know, I saw you guys at the Summer of Love concert. Right. I just walked in. Remember that? And walked in there, and I'd never seen this before. Larry and Timmy, there's a song going on. And they're yelling back and forth at each other. You're drunk. No, I'm not. You're drunk. And they're going back and forth. And then, and as soon as it was time for them to suddenly harmonize, it was beautiful. And then the break comes again. Yeah, well.
I think one of them was in a tune to a different key and the other one wasn't.
That was right. That, one was a half step down,
that,
I
that
think.
Gig. Yeah. It was cool. It was a neat sound. I think it was very out.
Yeah, I got invited to play bass on that song. And we started. And there was something just wasn't right because Timmy was you were tuned a half step
Tim
down.
We were tuned a half step down, but Timmy was still tuned to he played with the band in front of us.
Right. So he was playing
a song or two and forgot to tune back down.
I didn't know what to do.
But for us longtime fans and people who knew him, there's nothing. We're just watching them going.
It was funny.
There they go.
We figured it out.
I think you have to really consider the fact that Larry has such a comforting voice. A warmth in his voice that you don't hear in that many people's voices. It's a gift. You've either got it or you don't.
Well, I probably inherited that from my mom because she had a sweet voice.
And he and Timmy just sing so well together.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah,
Timmy's a fantastic singer.
Gentlemen and ladies, we're being joined on the phone, if I'm not mistaken, from Nashville. Larry Nager is with us. Larry?
I'm here.
There we go, Larry. And Larry Goshorn is here, and Katie Lauer is here, Gary Burbank's here, Joe Stewart and Marco Sastry. Billy Hines is with us as well. And I think is Tim still on the line? And Tim Goshorn's still on the line. Yeah, okay, good.
Oh, hey, everybody. I miss y'all.
Michelle, I miss you back. We need to get back up here and start writing again.
All right, start that newspaper up again.
I think I will.
Larry Nager, talk a little bit about the jewel that is our Larry up here, Larry Goshorn, and how you...
Well, I'm always happy, as a member of Larry's Anonymous, I'm always happy to support him. But there was never a time when there wasn't a Larry Goshorn for me in Cincinnati music. It's, you know, I came to Cincinnati in 78 to work with a young lady in your midst at this point, and didn't really know much about Cincinnati, other than what I knew from going down there to play with Red Mountain String Band at Aunt Maudie's back in those days. But, you know, Larry's always a presence there with, you know, whether it was with Pure Prairie League and then post-time with the Goshorn Brothers band. And I was just real happy that we had the Cammies up and running long enough to honor Timmy and Larry and the whole Pure Prairie League kind of family there. But within the work with Larry and Marcos with the production, I'm looking at this kind of from the newspaper's perspective, other than the fact that, you know, you look for the music you like if you're going to write about it for the paper. And that was not always easy to find. But Larry's just so good and just so well-rooted, you know, in what music should be about and just with a distinctive sense of place, too. I think that unique Cincinnati thing, one of the reasons King Records honoring that is just the variety of musics that go into a thing and yet creates a real cohesive sound. I mean, Larry obviously had a lot of different influences in his playing, you know, with the rock, with blues, with country and all, but was able to amalgamate it in a way, probably the best roots guitarist in Cincinnati after the late, great Lonnie Mack, I would say.
Oh, shucks.
So, I mean, you know, I think you get some perspective from a distance, you get some perspective over time. And I think it's easy to take Larry for granted because he's there. But, I mean, there are people who keep the flame burning in a town. What Larry Goshorn did for Cincinnati, I think, is much greater than anything Cincinnati ever did for Larry Goshorn.
Well, thank you, Larry.
Actually, last time Larry and I hung together, and I don't even know if you remember this, we ran into each other in the kitchen department at Home Goods looking for bargains in cookware.
Oh, I do kind of remember that, yeah.
That'd be about 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah, at least. You know, it's funny, you were talking about musical roots, and my earliest memory of picking up music from somebody besides my family, Danny and I, my older brother Danny, who's a year older than I am, we had a Philco radio, you know, one of those things that looked like a tiny jukebox, and we were in, we had an attic room in this mansion over in Fort Thomas where we were living. It looked like my old Kentucky home, beautiful place. And all knotty pine walls and everything. And it had great acoustics. So this Philco radio, we would turn it on when we'd go to bed at night, and we could get a station from Memphis, which played nothing but blues, and one from Nashville, which played nothing but country. And we listened to the very best of both of those worlds, and that's what I remember as being the outside influence. So it's not surprising that, you know, I
worked at that station in Memphis, WDIA.
Yeah, great station.
Yeah. Rufus Thomas, some good guys on there.
Well, yeah, the people on WDIA, you know, I mean, that's where B.B. King had his 15-minute show selling the, what was a combination of alcohol and laxative.
That's right.
Get all your stuff taken care of.
And what was your name on that station, Gary?
I was Johnny Apollo, your blue-eyed soul brother in the front row. Put a little slidey glide, dippity hip, bumping your up. Bless my right on rock and roll soul. Light my candle, make me a hard handle. That was actually my name. Handle was my last name.
Oh, Lord, do we miss that. Man.
Sure. For sure.
I needed some of that.
It's like a tonic.
It really is. Let's go back to the Pure Prairie League days when the band is once again changing, and you and Timmy are exiting, and Vince Gill is taking your place.
Exactly.
How'd that all come about?
Well, I was going to go up to San Francisco for a little while to try a different approach to music. We were getting a little too country for what I thought was happening at the time, and as it turned out, country became the biggest type of music ever, but who knew? So Tim and I took off up to San Francisco to put together another band. But before I went, Vince came over to the house every day for a couple of weeks. And we would just run through the songs and I'd show him the songs. I'll tell you what, he was such a good guitar player. It was immediately evident that he was going to do really, really well with this group. And it was easy to see why they had chosen him. There weren't that many great country-style players in Los Angeles at the time. I mean, maybe there were, but they weren't accessible.
So in transferring these songs to him, totally different style and everything, but did he take to them immediately?
Vince knew the songs before I was finished showing them to him. I mean, the guy could really play. He could play any style of music, and lead guitar was no problem for him, and chords just came really naturally to him. Really an excellent musician, a beautiful voice.
What year was that? Then?
That was 79. Yeah.
Larry, is there something at this point in your career, and your career is still ongoing because we have a brand new CD here, something you, a bucket list sort of thing, and something you've wanted to do and you've not yet been able to do so musically for any aspect of life?
Well, I'm pretty much done. I've had the luck to be able to do pretty much what I wanted through my life without anybody telling me you can't do that. And if you don't know you can't do it, you just go ahead and do it. So all I wanted to do really was play music. So the more I played music, the happier I was. And I loved going out with Pure Prairie League and playing. We played as big as 200,000 people at a time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you turn your guitar and the wave of people out there moves and it was pretty incredible stuff. But at the same time, doing these small shows like Tommy's, you know, there's some shows that we did there that I will never forget because they were just so tight. And your real friends are there. And you just, the band was so good and so tight. And it's all about how good the players are and how much fun you're having, you know, while you're playing.
Of your recorded music, what rises to the top is your favorite piece that you've done or been involved with?
Well, Two Lane Highway, of course, has just saved my butt several times, you know what I mean? Around tax time, usually. So I love that for that reason. And it also was, when I wrote it, like in the back of that camper, it was, I'll never forget being back there, rocking around. And it really said what I wanted to say, and I was really happy with that. But as far as satisfaction, I think this latest one that I've done, it took so long to put together, but every song on here, not one of them took more than 20 minutes to write. It took a heck of a lot longer to record them. But I think the songs that you write the most quickly are the ones that are the best. I mean, they're really heartfelt. So I like this last one that I've done.
And that song, I Wish I Could Fly, the title song, is a tremendous song.
Thank you so much.
You start listening to that, and you basically, your mind flies. I mean, as you listen to it, and you're thinking, I do too. I want to fly away.
Well, you know, I was listening to the news one day and just kind of taking it all in. And I thought, well, I've got to write all this down. There's so many horrible things going on. And as I was writing it down, the thought occurred to me, if I could fly, I would be out of here. And that was what it was all about.
I think everyone could relate to that part of it. You could. I knew it. Hearing the song, I realized that's where that came from.
Yeah. I'm sure everybody feels that way at least once in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And coffee just another day, watching the world fall apart. The coast is on fire, there's a hurricane about to hit the Carolinas. There's something wrong with the frogs in Minnesota. They ain't looking too good. Bullets fly in the valley, twisters ripping through Tornado Alley. They caught a suspect on the interstate. They found a victim in a car. War isn't over. Planes are falling from the sky. I wish I could fly. I wish I could fly. I wish I could fly. They paid some guy $10 million, but knowing how to throw a ball. Politicians are all liars, wasting money, making fools of us all. They found the pill that makes you happy. Too expensive to buy. The fish are all dying, and no one knows why. I wish I could fly. I wish I could fly. I wish I could fly. Wish I could fly. Wish I could fly. Wish I could fly.
I'd like to add that I think everybody in this room who's had the good fortune to be able to play with you has had musical experiences that are, you know, last a lifetime for us. And, you know, even back in the old days, just playing guitar and in your bedroom, you know, on a Friday night, all the way up through the Sacred Mushroom, we had some pretty good jams.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun.
It's really, really fabulous. We all thank you.
Well, great, Joe. Thanks.
Speaking of being denied, as you said, you were able to play all that time, and really, you no one told you you couldn't do something.
Right.
And you told me I couldn't do something once.
No, I never did that.
Remember that time we were on the first song I wanted to do on that on the blues album?
Oh, I remember that.
It was White Trash Babies.
Yeah, I said, maybe we shouldn't do that.
And OD wouldn't play it after I finally did it. And so I went, oh, he said, well, think of something else. I said, okay. So I go home, and I thought, I'm going to think of the most serious song I possibly can for me to do. And I came in, and I said, let's do St. James Infirmary. And Larry looked at me and said, let's do.
Got it.
I'm like, what?
That song, Gary, I still listen to that. I keep a copy in my car. And Kim, the other day, my wife, was in the car, and it was like, she said it was dark, and there was fog, and a little bit of drizzle and everything. And she said Gary was going, ow. She said it was the creepiest thing. She loved it. Oh,
And speaking of playing guitar, like you said, I mean, I knew Larry was great on the guitar, and you used my guitar. I remember that.
Yep.
And he just took it and just, you know, of course, after I played it, he had to tune it up. But he just took it and he just made everything just come alive. And like you said, two little notes would just, it was like having a great dinner or something, but in your mind of music. And what an amazing job that you did on that and everything on that album.
Yeah, that was a good album. Mm-hmm.
Hey, on the flip side of the bucket list question, something that you've been involved with, musically speaking. I don't want to hear about jail terms or anything like that. Getting in trouble. A project that you've done that didn't go right or, oh man, shouldn't have done that.
I remember one thing that happened. We tried to record this reggae band. They were really good. We were liking them a lot, but the two brothers, they were Cincinnati Joe's sons. Talk about brothers that fought. These guys could not get in the room together. They were at each other's throats like a couple of coyotes or something. And it's a shame because the music was excellent. And I was kind of sad that they never came in to finish it and we didn't get to release that. And, you know, I wish that we had had different production on some of the Pure Prairie League stuff that I did with Pure Prairie League. Some of it just didn't bring out what the group really was. I know I have some old cassettes of us live back then. And that's why we ended up doing the live version, because it just wasn't coming across in the records.
Who was producing back then?
It started out with John Boylan, who was Linda Ronstadt's producer. And,
was this
Boston.
This is your era, or this goes back to the beginning? Who produced the first two?
Bob Ring did the first two.
Yeah. He handled acoustic guitars really well. And then we went with John Boylan, who was a good producer, and Paul Grupp was the engineer, and he was really good, too.
This is for Tulane?
Yeah, for Tulane Highway and for If the Shoe Fits. Mm-hmm. And then we switched to Alan Abrahams. And when we went into that, it was like, it was getting towards the 80s, and they were starting to do all these tricky things in recording, you know, with
backward cymbals
and things like that. And we toyed with that, you know what I mean? And it really didn't come out like we wanted it to. I think that recording should feel very real and big, like you're sitting inside the acoustic guitar, and they just weren't coming out like that. And I don't know whose fault it was, but everybody has to share, you know. So,
Tim, you still there?
I am.
Can you talk a little bit about your portion of the Pure Prairie League when you and Larry were in, but maybe about your songs?
Well, yeah, I joined at the end, like when they were actually in the post-production parts of the live Taking the Stage album. So I'm actually on that record. No credits, but I'm on that record singing some background stuff. But yeah, that was when I joined up. And then we went right into the studio, as I recall, and started on Just Fly. It wasn't too long after I joined.
Went down to Florida.
A short stint. Yeah, it's Criteria.
Criteria Studios, yeah.
Right. But, yeah, that was a unique experience for me. That was my first time in a big studio like that. And we got to stay in the mansion where they did what was the Clapton album?
461 Ocean Boulevard.
Yeah,
exactly. All right. That's where the whole thing was.
Nice place.
And we got to stay there and hang out. And that was pretty cool, though. It was a lot of fun. The band was a good band. That particular record was the one, I think, of all of them. The production on it was just, the songs didn't come across like they should have.
Yeah, there were some really good songs on that album, and they just didn't come across. They were hard to listen to, kind of. I don't know.
Yeah, it was nothing like we did them live. We should have done that one live, too. I think we should have done them all live.
I'm Bam Pow. I had the pleasure of playing with Larry for lots of years here. We would bump into Pure Prairie League when Larry and Timmy were out on the road, and I was in a band called LeBlanc and Carr. Lenny LeBlanc was friends with Larry, and he used to talk about him, and of course, I knew who Sacred Mushroom was growing up around here. One thing that happened, I guess this was around, well, when Lynyrd Skynyrd crashed. That was 77, right? We were on the road. I was in this band, LeBlanc and Carr, and Timmy and Larry were out with Pure Prairie League, and we were supposed to meet in Baton Rouge, and both of us were opening up for Lynyrd Skynyrd. And of course, that's when they crashed. It was right before that. And so we went on home, but Pure Prairie League played the concert anyway, even though, you know, what happened. But that was odd. That would have been really the first time I would have met Larry. I mean, I knew who he was, but that would have been the first time we would have actually met, but it didn't happen. So, unfortunately. But we used to bump into each other. We would follow them in on the road. I remember following them into, where was that? It was New York, Stony Brook College. We opened up for Dickie Betts, and they had just been there. That used to happen a lot. But I didn't know Larry until I moved back to town in 1980 to play with the Raisins. Well, some of the fun stuff we've done, Larry, Timmy, Rick Marksberry, and myself had a gig at Kings Island. And this was like a musician's perfect little gig. You would show up on Saturdays or Sundays, sometimes both, at noon. And you would play for company picnics. We could just do anything we wanted. We're sitting out there in the picnic grove at Kings Island, right next to the food line. So we didn't have to eat breakfast or anything. We just roll out of bed, go to Kings Island, start playing, play for an hour, and get in the chicken line. But we had a blast doing that. We would play from like noon till 2, and then sometimes they'd have us after that from 4 to 6, and then you could still make a gig that night. So it was great. It was a pleasure playing with Larry. He was always completely under control as far as when it was time to play. You know what he was going to play. And he's just so good, you know. I mean, it's ridiculous how talented he is. And all the songs he's written. And I think he's got the coolest voice, you know what I mean. And I wish he would get back out and play some more. That's what I'm hoping for. I call him up and say, come on, man. Let's go. And then he says, but my calluses. And I said, well, there's only one way to get them back now. Come on. So I just want to say one more thing. I really love Larry, and I feel very privileged to have got to spend time with him musically and just personally. He's a great guy and a great musician.
Jim, thank you so much for joining us. Larry Nager on the phone. Thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you, guys.
Oh, Steve.
Larry, I love you, brother.
Steve, you're still there?
I'm still here.
Oh,
enjoying listening, you know?
I thought one of them got disconnected. Bingo. Okay, Steve, some parting words.
Well, I just feel grateful to have met and played with both Timmy and Larry, but we're talking about Larry. So as a musician, as a singer, as a guitar player, and then the thing that fuels that is just him as a person, just being a great person. So I really love him in all those different ways.
Billy Hines, thank you so much. Any parting words?
Yes, it's been an honor playing with Larry all these years, and it's been a real privilege to be here and be included in this. And thank you.
Thank you for coming by. Marcos Zastri, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Thank you. I'd like to second what Billy said, and thank Larry. Larry's done a lot of things for me. And we just talked about the Summer of Love concert. And Larry said, come on up and play, you know. And Tarbell didn't know who I was. In fact, he mentioned. He said, who's that guy there? And Larry let me get up there. I had a nice show. It didn't hurt me at all. And it was, I'd like to thank him. And I love you, buddy.
Love you too, man.
Katie, send your love letter to Larry right now, would you?
Well, I think he's just a heck of a fine singer. I know he's a good guitar player, but that's not my area of expertise as much as the warmth in the voice, the reaching out and grabbing somebody with the voice. And that, I think he does, and that makes him a singer.
I've heard you play his music on the radio, and when you introduce it, I can tell it comes from the heart. That means a lot to anybody who values his music.
Yeah, it means a lot to me too, Katie. Thank you.
Gary Burbank.
I'd like to just thank Larry for being a great friend. We have been really good friends for a while me with musically and all of that too. Most of all, thank you for the smoothies. I haven't been constipated since.
Glad I could help.
And other than Tim, the guest that goes back farthest with Larry is Joe Stewart. Joe.
Yeah, I just want to say that I'm humbled to be in a room with so many great Cincinnati musicians. You guys, including, Larry and every one of you, I just feel I'm truly humbled. And Larry, you're my oldest, longest friend as far back as I can remember. And just so glad to be a part of this.
Well, I'm glad to have you here, Joe. Thanks.
Larry's most recent CD just came out a few months ago. It's called I Wish I Could Fly. It is a dandy. I think everybody here at the table agrees it's probably the best work Larry's done. But I think it's probably at Everybody's and Shake It. I hope it
Everybody's
is.
Everybody's and Shake It, yeah. Eventually, I plan on going to, you know, online, but I haven't done it yet.
And from the bottom of my heart, thanks for everything you've done, man.
Thank you, Brian.
Great friend for all these years.
You and I go pretty far back, too.
We go back.
Back to the when we were playing up at WEBN in the barn there. Yeah.
About people, they can take a lot of stuff. Life can throw a lot of curves at you. Life can get a little bit rough. Granddaddy used to tell me, when things got tough, you can get used to hanging.
It was our honor, all of us, to host a roundtable of love for Larry Goshorn, whose musical career has touched the hearts of his family, his friends, and fans for decades. You'll find many of the CDs he recorded with the Goshorn Brothers, Pure Prairie League, Larry's solo material, Sacred Mushroom, and others at local record stores like Shake It and Everybody's. I'd like to thank Cassandra Stepp, Stephen Baum, and Andy Balterman for their assistance, and also producer Lee Hay. And you'll find a link to this Larry Goshorn special at WVXU.org. It's been a blast. I'm Brian O'Donnell.